Hello, you're listening to the Brainy Speech Therapist podcast. We're your hosts, Helen McLean and Jan McIntosh Brown. Here, we aim to look at all aspects of brain injury, from the research to the rehabilitation, and always through the lens of speech and language therapy.
Hi everybody, this is Jan.
And this is Helen. Welcome to this episode of the Brainy Speech Therapist podcast. Thank you to everyone for giving our previous episodes a listen. We'd love to hear feedback and comments on your thoughts about any of the topics we've covered so far. And if you're enjoying the podcast, do share it with your friends and colleagues. Also, if you're not already following us on Twitter at BrainySLT or Instagram at Brainy Speech Therapists, head to those platforms right now and hit the follow button.
This episode may have some recording, which is a familiar message we say, but we do hope you'll persevere as it's about the people that we are all so passionate about working with, people who have experienced a brain injury. We spoke with Alan and Fiona some time ago, and so we are so grateful to them for sharing their stories and thoughts about what has happened to them.
The opinions and views expressed in this podcast are of the individual and should not be considered professional advice. If you have a brain injury, suspect you have a brain injury, or think someone you know has a brain injury, please seek dedicated professional advice.
We have two very special guests tonight, Fiona and Alan. Fiona and Alan have both had brain injuries. Say hello, you two.
Hi.
So tonight we're going to hear a little bit of their story, as they are still in their story, so it's not finished. So Fiona, tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. Hi there. Okay, so my name's Fiona McCormick, and I had a massive heart attack about 5.5 years ago. This meant that I had like starvation of oxygen to my brain for like 32 minutes. I had a hypoxic brain injury, I was in an induced coma for about 2 weeks in the high dependency unit in the Jubilee, and discharged to the Royal Hospital to a kind of diabetes ward, just a generic kind of ward for about 88 days. I was discharged home and I was waiting for kind of aftercare for about 3 months or so. It was a bit lost, it was a bit stagnant after that. There was just my partner Andy, who really I'm really privileged to have, that was able to kind of just chase everything, try and find support, try and find headway, try and find and found my rehab in the end. Before my I had to learn in rehab, I had to learn, you know, speech therapy, psychology, had occupational therapy, and all the things that I needed to do to get my back on my feet. Before I had my heart attack, I was really highly functioning. I was working as a chef, I was a hotel manager in Tobermory in the Western Isles, and I was IT support manager. I set up a restaurant in Berlin and doing food, and you know, I'm also a musician, and I play in a band and program drum machines and play piano and sung and all the rest of the gig down in Glasgow. So I was really, things were just great. I was just had a great life, and then the whole world kind of falls apart and sort of everyone around about me. So I just, I think afterwards it's quite a difference. Obviously I was gone, I had to relearn again from scratch and like a baby, and that was it really. I can elaborate, but I'll maybe see if anybody has any questions after that.
Yeah, so you didn't go from your hospital straight to rehab, did you?
No, I wasn't suitable. The one that was offered to me was not suitable. It was a lot of travel, it was a lot of just the dynamics didn't work, and so I'm from Glasgow, went to school in Glasgow, lived in Glasgow, worked in Glasgow my whole life, so it was something that I was familiar with, and so I went to rehabilitation in Glasgow, and that was great. That was where I mean, I knew nothing, I didn't retain any of my literacy skills or numeracy or nothing. And so what I did, I had to learn the alphabet song, you know, and you know, everything mm-hmm. was at the time of shoelaces, I think took about a year and a half. And to this day, I do them. I insist on wearing trainers every day, but it takes me 10 times and I get myself all stressed, but I'll do it, you know, and I'll get there then. And so that's been that's really what my rehab's been like. It's been my speech as well. I think I speak really fluently now, but at the time I was gobbledygook, I was not clear. I really struggled to get words out. I had little tools in myself. I remember in the hospital, I had to say blue and I had to think of Baloo from the Jungle Book and say Baloo, Baloo. You know, little things about my speech that they seem like a million miles away now, but actually were really difficult at the time when I couldn't ever remember yellow. You know, it's just everything was just gone, totally gone. And so when you're trying to learn these basic things, you also have the challenge of this, what I call this opposite guy. When I'm trying to learn something, it's like I've done it like opposite way around, do you know what I mean? And so everything's, it's just, I don't know what it's called, but compensating or whatever, but I got there in the end and I'm really kind of determined to do it. So I think that's why I've progressed so well, and these issues are still there with me and they've not gone, but it's about the tools I was taught in rehab, and they just wonderful. I'm so lucky, because I just, otherwise I wouldn't have the stimulation. Andy had found things really early day called, I think called React 2, and it was just a screen and it had like number shapes and numbers and a couple of letters and things like that. There was things about sequencing and, you know, there was all different elements. He just found it, and so he would put me in, and I wouldn't know what it was, but I would just be pressing something, trying to like get those neurons going, you know, and actually working. And so that was the only kind of stimulation that I had. But now when I went into rehab, I just learned basic how to get myself together. I learned the clock, you know, and I still couldn't read and write when I came out of rehabilitation. It was actually, Andy had found an adult literacy teacher as well, Rose, and she has been a mentor for 4 years now, and she's got me reading the point where I've now written the first part of my book about it, and it was all collected on an audio file, because I couldn't capture anything. I was desperate to get these things in, you know, kind of captured some way. And so eventually me and Rose worked our way through, and just I've written down, you know, all the things that I remember at that point in time. It was strange and trippy and really just crazy, really. And that was the bit that I was most interested in. So that's why I was so interested in keeping it together, because I was trying to make a positive out of it. So I'm able to do so. I'm now I'm able to type everything down, you know, and so I've now got it on a soft copy. And so I'm able to, you know, just continue on. But there's a lot more in it that I've not written down yet, you know, so that's, I'm just on the stage, always learning, always working away, trying to get better.
I can hear the progress that you've made from how you're describing how things were for you at the start. What I was wondering, Fiona, is see when you went into rehab and you started your rehabilitation journey with therapists, were yes. there things that they highlighted to you that you hadn't spotted? Because it sounds like you were very aware of lots of changes, but were there things that maybe took you by surprise?
I thought there was nothing wrong with me. Like, right. Honestly, I thought I was totally cool. I thought it was like, I just thought I knew better, really. And I'm like that anyway, because I'm quite a kind of independent. I've just always been really assertive. You know, I've always been that kind of way, professional and things like that. And I've always just been like, yeah. And also a huge part of it, which is the compensating and people pleasing about mm-hmm. this, is really you're just trying to say, no, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with me. And you just get put in a kind of a veil over everything to say that everything's fine, to make sure that you're not hurt anyone else, you know, you're not upset anyone else. And that's a lot of that as well. So they're actually always the best part about it. The depth was being challenged, you know, during the sessions that I had. And it was, is that really, you know, is that really what, and you know, maybe not think this, and actually obviously come to realise that no, that is an issue and I need to accept it. I'm still accepting what happened, you know. I've not accepted it. I'm still acceptance, I think, is one of the hardest things to do mm-hmm. at all, to just go, no, this is different now, this is not, and you're not the same person anymore. That's a real, that's just got to deal with it, you know, but it's mm-hmm. not easy, you know.
There's a real vulnerability to it, isn't there? If, like you say, yeah. you're someone who was very much in control of your life and was a people pleaser, to kind of show that there's maybe some chinks in the armour there can be quite difficult, I imagine.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So shall we... So Alan, do you want to tell us a little bit about your story?
I'll try to if I can. My basic story was that before May of 2020, I was working as a solicitor. Lockdown had started, so I was doing quite a lot of work from home. But I already had certain medical problems in that I've got hearing, wear hearing aids in both ears. That I've already got, already had epilepsy, although albeit it only affected me intermittently. I had two knee operations on my right knee, neither of which was tremendously successful. And I'd also had a right hip replacement as well. what I then happened was I would normally cycle in and out of work, and I'd gone into work because my printer wasn't working, rather. And I was cycling home, and as I was cycling home at tea time one evening, I came off the bike. It gave me a sort of fracture of my left hand cheek. There was a knock-on fracture to my right hand cheek, and plus bleeding in the brain, which was the main problem. And because of that, I was in hospital for about 4 to 5 weeks. And about the first 4 weeks of that, I was pretty much out unconscious, and I wouldn't be able to tell you what had happened in the first 4 weeks of that. In the fifth week, I began to get some kind of understanding of where I was and what had happened to me. Albeit that wasn't a full complete idea of it. When I had the accident, I'd lost my hearing aid. So accordingly, when the staff in the hospital spoke to me, I wouldn't be able to hear or understand them. So that made the problems 10 times worse, to be honest with you. In hospital as well, I got moved from ICU to high dependency, and then they moved me from high dependency again into a respiratory ward, and the respiratory wards weren't really trained in you know, brain injury, so it became tricky for me in that particular ward. And if I did lose my temper for some puerile reason, they would invariably put onto my girlfriend and my daughter, and I would really have a go at them. I really wanted to be able to talk to the outside world, or to see the outside world.
So, Alan, can I interrupt you and ask, did you think you needed rehab?
No. And the answer to that question is no, because I thought that I could really go home from the hospital and I would be perfectly okay. That was probably wrong with the benefit of hindsight. I think if I had gone home at that juncture, it would have all collapsed round about me. What I needed was to go to rehab for them to show me but to understand what my potential problems were, and for them to actually gauge when it would be proper, convenient, or when I would come to grips with getting home and being able to look after myself. It was actually rehab was a great thing. I was still probably not quite ready to go home when rehab actually did let me go home, which was probably 2 to 3 months later, because without rehab giving me a general kind of or explaining what was wrong with me, where I was going, and what I was doing, without them and for them encouraging me and complimenting me, if they hadn't been there to try and push me that way, I think I would have struggled to do it from hospital, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, I think some people certainly I've noticed this, and I think people I've worked with over the years notice this, that being an inpatient in a hospital gets you so far, doesn't it? And then you've got to kind of move on to the next stage, whatever that might look like.
I think that's true. I mean, I've got an awful lot to be thankful to the hospital for, because without them, I doubt if I'd be walking and talking today. I mean, the night that my accident happened, my girlfriend got a telephone call from the hospital to tell her to expect the worst. And the fact that I'm actually out and able to walk and talk is actually a miracle. And that's a miracle that wouldn't have happened without the care in the hospital. But I think the hospital didn't really teach me, or I didn't really understand from hospital that the seriousness of what I had when I eventually had some kind of cognizance about it.
I would actually agree with that, if I can just butt in as well. Alan, I felt the same way. It was looked after so well, but they just didn't know how to treat us at all. It was, and my mum had actually found a banner from Headway that she'd bought from someone and had to put it up against on my bed, and just so that people would maybe know how to deal with me and maybe deal with a lot of the noise, and that, you know, there was so many elements of it, you know, early days, you're so sensitive to everything, you're hearing and everything else, and there was very little just knowledge. Nobody knew anything better than them. I've never known anyone who'd had a brain injury, or actually didn't, so it was new to all of us as well.
I think that's such a good point, and it's something that Jan and I, I'm sure, both experience a lot, that we'll have people come to us for their ongoing rehabilitation, and they'll often say, do you know, the staff in the hospital were maybe a bit hit and miss, will we say, around their kind of knowledge and their understanding. And that's not to say that they're not trying their best, but it's just that brain injury is so complicated, isn't it? And you're both got things in common in terms of what the impact was, but your stories have got a lot of differences as well, and it just goes to show that no two brain injuries are the same.
Yeah.
I wanted to comment, Alan, from as a speech and language therapist, what you said around just simply the fact that your hearing aids had been lost or broken at the time of the accident, and no one really knew that you needed hearing aids. It's just such a basic thing, isn't it? I hear you saying that, and I get quite frustrated on your behalf, because I'm sure any of my speech therapy colleagues would be listening to this and thinking, for goodness sake, we need to get these basic things in place. So yeah, that's something that just goes to show the importance of getting fundamentals in place to make life a bit easier for someone at that early stage, because you would have already been very confused and unsure about what was happening, but to then not be able to hear what was being said to you must have been very disconcerting.
Well, it was very hard. I mean, I'm in, at the end of the day, having had the accident, what I'm then in a ward, I haven't a clue how I got there, I haven't a clue what's happening to me, and finally I can't understand what people are saying to me. And that makes it pretty much impossible to understand and get to grips with.
So can I ask either of you or both of you, what sort of got you through all this? What was important to you? You know, what sort of stayed with you through your injury and your rehab? And
well, the important thing from my point of view was to get home and then to try and to take care of myself. I mean, my job meant that I had the phone almost constantly glued to my ear, and so that I wanted to be able to do the same, i.e. I wanted to be able to talk to people constantly, and as and when I got the chance. Now,
and what, Al, what was the barrier there?
Well, my family didn't want me to get a phone. I mean, I would be on the phone or on WhatsApp constantly. My family didn't want me to get a mobile phone, because if I did so, they were worried that I would eventually speak to clients. All my clients had my mobile number. Because of the hearing aids, I couldn't really hear on landlines. My family weren't keen on me getting the mobile, because they were afraid that I would talk to my clients and I would probably end up, you know, embarrassing myself or demeaning myself.
And what did you think about that at the time?
At the time, I thought that was ridiculous. At the time,
and what do you think now?
They were absolutely spot on.
Thanks, family.
No, absolutely. I've got no one else, but I have to thank them too, because I would have truly made a complete idiot of myself if I'd been talking to clients.
What about you, Fiona? What got you through? What's getting you through? Because you're still on your journey.
Yeah, just trying to. Just music's the most important thing, I think, for me. That was one thing that it made sense to me. That it just made sense because I love it and I'm obsessed with it anyway. And I think that just listening to music whilst I was in there had an iPod glued to my pillow, and I could just listen to the songs and I could recognise all these songs that I knew, but I didn't know that I existed. I hadn't even woken up yet, you know, it's funny. And I think that just to this day, because I think you can just feel music and you can experience it in different ways. Don't need to be explained, you know, you don't need to read it. I remember there's hilarious moments of me singing out loud in the hospital, you know, the words, you know, just you can imagine me singing the wrong words and everything like that, and it was always a bit of kind of humour. But music definitely, and obviously lucky that I've got, you know, support my partner and my family and everything. There's a lot of people who don't have that. I definitely had to be, you know, stopped because I thought I was control everything still, and I wasn't ready. And just the patience that they all exercised, you know, was unreal. And you do in retrospect, you say, oh, okay, thanks very much for that. Sorry, you know, but it has to be done. But you don't. I think you're uninhibited as well. You just think, why not?
Do you think, because I've heard some people say that they kind of maybe take the view of, do you know what, this terrible thing has happened to me, so why not give things a go? Because what else have I got to lose, almost?
Definitely.
Yeah, do you think it's an element of that? Yeah, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's kind of your personality, Fiona?
I'm quite a kind of positive anyway. I think I'm always I woke up today, I'm so lucky I woke up saying that, and I don't know why, but you know, I just felt lucky that I was, and I must have dodged a bullet there, you know, and I'm lucky to be here and able to, you know, talk about this as well, share the information that other people don't have. That's quite important to me. I think I feel a wee bit of I don't know, I had a bit of an epiphany anyway, you know, the importance of life and priorities and, you know, work. Just all these things change, your head changes, you know, you have to, if you're trying to keep the head for a day and manage a day, then, you know, other things aren't really important anymore, so that's...
Does that ring true for you, Alan, or how do you feel about kind of your priorities and...
Well, I think I've got respect for Fiona in the first instance, because I think it's a very difficult road that you have to work your way down. I've sort of tried to read back, or read up rather, on the ailments that I've had, and I think some of them are still exist, sadly. I was looking on a website, and they were talking about cognitive communication difficulties. Mm. And when I look at that, I hate to say that I see myself in a lot of regards with the ailments that come across in that.
So what do you see when you're talking about cognitive communication difficulties, Alan? What were you reading that you thought, oh, right, yep, I can tick that off, that's me?
Well, I would say that memory, short-term memory, is absolutely rotten. And I mean, I'll tell something to somebody once, and then I'll forget, and I've told them, and I'll tell them again 5 minutes later. Memory is poor. I'm trying to now think. I read about cognitive communication, and I can't now bloody remember what they were saying.
Memory.
Sorry about that.
Have you got strategies that you use? Then I wonder, are there things that you've found that have been helpful to combat whatever these issues are? Someone listening, maybe thinking, oh yeah, I'm a bit like that, and here's something I could use.
Well, I think, to be honest with you, the rehab gives you a certain degree of confidence in the things that you can do and are able to do, and the staff in rehab help you with that by praising you for taking small steps. sadly, when you come out of rehab, that disappears. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you're left with not really quite knowing where you're going forward with them. Or, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because that has disappeared.
It rings true. I have a lot of that to this day. If I see a number 4, I see 14. I'm actually mixed up that way, and I can't see faces. I couldn't see faces for a long time. So there's a lot of that. And when you start to step outside in the big bad world and go out yourself a walk, and you know, maybe go and buy something, short little steps again. You're talking about that, Alan. The kind of first steps again to independence again. I feel that there's a lot of impatience and things like that, and just not being able to see things properly, maybe trying to understand what you're doing at that point in that shop. You know, I'm using that typical example, but that was terrifying. The big bad world's terrifying. It really has to
And can I ask you also, what about your autonomy and your identity as a person? Do you feel that's changed?
Personally, I think yes, largely. I think because you're dependent on rehab and what they say and how they praise you, I think you lose your independence and you lose your autonomy because of that. I mean, the other thing that again I was trying to understand was that, you know, I've had what I think is called a traumatic brain injury, but it has left me with I think psychological problems. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, the other thing I read about today was post-traumatic amnesia, and I mean that's pretty accurate, because for the first 4 weeks after I came out of after the accident, I can remember absolutely nothing at all about that.
Same.
You know, mm-hmm. So I was only gradually coming round to what had actually happened to me. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Fiona?
Yeah, about
autonomy.
Oh God, right. Well, okay. So briefly, I lost. Well, I was more home and everything. I dealt with everything myself. And one flat and everything. So when you take not well, then the bills stop. You get paid. You know, and so therefore, so it's just. Everything just started. The fallout was outrageous, and I basically lost my house, lost everything, absolutely everything. I lost my signature. I had to just rebuild up again, basically. But I lost because I was bit myself to deal with my own affairs. I'm so lucky that I had my wee sister who is a solicitor, and she was able to take on as a public guardian. So I had to have a public guardian. So anything at all I wanted to do. Even though I was compass maintenance at that point, you know, able to kind of, you know I knew what needed to be done and things like that. It was kind of signed away. So I had to sign away my freedom, you know, for the benefit of me. And I'm so lucky I have someone so close to me to do that for me. But it was losing everything. Like, I didn't have any control of my own affairs, didn't have, you know, anything. I can't explain to you how I have to. It happened again a couple of years ago. I was using a card or something like that, and I was sending it, and they didn't recognise my signature because I literally have to sit and try and write a signature, and it's like a 5-year-old. And well, it's getting a bit better now, a bit fancier now, but it's basically. So I think losing that, losing everything, just not being in control of yourself when you were the boss, you were, you know, it's a big change, a huge change. I think, I guess.
Yeah, I think that we all take for granted our signature, don't we?
And then we get a letter from the bank. We don't recognise your signature, and I'm saying, well, this is why, and I have to get a letter from that to explain, and there's a doctor's letter to see that. And it's just the kind of just domino effect, and there's so many little things that you just do not think of that have to do with it. And it's not me that was dealing with it. I was happy as Larry. I was in this little world of my own, you know, at this point. And you know, everyone in the world was having to deal with, you know, what happened.
But there's so much trust that you've both kind of implied there, that having to put into your family, your friends, and the therapists that are there helping you. And I would say, as a therapist, certainly I'm very mindful of that, and it is a real kind of privilege to have someone kind of be open to whatever the kind of rehab plan that you might have for them, because I suppose you might be thinking, well, this is my chance. This is what I've got to do. And that takes a lot, doesn't it? If you've gone from being a very articulate, independent person to suddenly feeling like I can't do
it. Out your words, you know, you know, like child, that kind of,
I mean, I don't think I realised the fundamental nature of speech therapists. It was, again, only after reading up bits and pieces here and there about it that I realised what a fundamental job speech therapists do carry out, to be honest with you.
Thanks, Alan. Tell us more.
I'm trying to think how I go about doing that. Speech therapists, to some extent, try and set down certain tasks or goals about the way you try and develop your life from coming round from being in a blank, if you like. That's a difficult one to explain. I mean, we're talking again about, you know, the lack of memory and the lack of way to, you know, necessarily to decide things and to, you know, to, in your case, Fiona, to write them down, etc. I thought speech therapy was, you know, just teaching you how to say the right things at the right time. But in actual fact, it's a lot more assessment there than that.
Yes, well, I think Helen and I and all the speech therapists out there could probably relate to when, you know, you first go and meet someone and you say, "Hi, I'm your speech therapist." And the person says, "I can speak fine. Mm-hmm. I don't need speech therapy."
But as you both kind of said about kind of memory difficulties and things and the impact that can have on being able to communicate, and like you were saying, Alan, about, you know, your family worrying what you might say to clients and the onward impact that would have, that again, there's another thing that speech therapists would definitely have a role in kind of supporting along the way. So I wonder if I can ask both of you, in terms of thinking to the future, how do you feel about that? What do you see opening up for you in the future? How do you envisage your future? Who would like to take that one first?
I'll have a go at that first. Yeah. Personally, I have no idea what the future holds for me. Whether I'm capable of going back to work, I think is doubtful, to be honest. I would be more tempted to volunteer for something that I felt was actually important, like the people who have managed to keep me alive, etc. I would like to give something back in my own small way towards that and work on that basis. The other side of that coin is that I feel I'm probably too young to retire in some fashion, and that I have to keep to try and stimulate myself. Physically, I've improved quite dramatically over the last 5 months at home. Mentally, I've not really extended myself as much as I should have done. And it's only by doing that I'm going to make myself properly 100% better, I would have thought.
So anyone listening out there who'd like Alan's expertise, just get in touch with us and we'll put you in touch with Alan.
No problem.
What about you, Fiona?
It's definitely it's very different from what I envisaged anyway. I'm just trying to stay alive. I am trying to apply the stuff that I was taught, the good stuff that was taught in rehab, that I only just started to allow myself to do recently, maybe in the last year or so. And it's two things like mindful coming in, meditation. I've started to get a bit arty and, you know, just make a mess on paper and paints and things like that. And also I've got my music as well, and I've got a music mentor, a charity called Paragon, and they're teaching me to play my synth again, you know, everything. They're just building me up in that sense. So in the future I see myself doing that, and I kind of am allowing myself to do that. And I don't think, you know, Fiona would have allowed herself to do that, but I'm just embracing the fact that I'm here, and also the opportunity to try and share a wee bit of this, because the lack of knowledge, I feel like Alan is very, you just want to raise a bit of awareness, you know, and let people know what's going on in this world. And again, I'm writing my book and I've started that, and I've got music, My Brain Injury and everything else it's called, and it's based on songs that were in, you know, I was listening to, and also based on just what actually happened and dream, like, states and stuff like that, and also writing the album with my partner and my band, and that's what I'm doing.
Thank you. Thank you. So yeah, anybody that, you know, wants to get in touch with Fiona about her music and art, our book writing, please get in touch with us and we'll put you in touch with
Fiona. I think I like how you both kind of said, oh, I'm not really sure quite what the future is going to hold, but you've actually both said some really lovely things that you hope to do, you know, and that you're already working towards. So I think we can all often be a little bit like that. I think I'm not really sure what I want, but through conversation things come through. So, you know, I can hear you're both talking about volunteering, about music and about mental and physical fitness. You know, there's definitely things coming through there. I wonder if we always ask everyone who comes on to tell us one thing that they would like those listening to the episode to take away. So we're lucky this week we've got two people, so I'm sure you'll both have different ideas, but Fiona, I'll come to you first. What would maybe be one thing that you would want someone to take away from what you said, your story?
Okay, well, most people see someone physically disabled and they take note of it and they act appropriately. Again, talking situations, buses, you know, a shop, things like that. And you never really think that the person in front of you taking ages is actually trying to see the note properly or count or, you know, just is confused by the environment you're in, having to deal with people behind you. You know, that kind of, I think just to kind of maybe assume that the person in front of you that's annoying you because they're maybe not quick enough or, you know, just did them in a way, you know, I think that you never know what's going on in that head. And I just think maybe I would like people to maybe think about that. Be gentle with people, you know, you don't know, you never know what's going on in your head and what they're struggling with, that sort of thing.
So it's that concept of that hidden disability, huge. That hidden injury. Thanks, Fiona. Alan?
I think that's probably true. I think mine is, to some extent, you have to be able to recognise the changes that have taken place within yourself. You have to take on board the encouragement you've received from places like rehab, and try to stimulate your desire to improve things, that you will only get out of something how much you put into it in the first instance. There are certain ground rules that allow you to do that, you have to try and follow, but I think getting praise and doing so is probably the main thing that keeps you on the about going forward, if you like. I don't know if that's
yep.
Yeah, excellent. I think they're both lovely things to hear. Definitely things that I think that they're both great ideas in terms of it's what therapists working with patients in recovery can do, but it's also just nice messages for the person themselves and also just for that person on the street who maybe might be feeling a bit impatient about the person who's a little bit slow or whatever in front of them. But actually we all just need to be a bit more patient with each other, don't we, and be gentle, like that phrase, Fiona. We need to be gentle with each other. Lovely. That's a lovely note to end on, isn't it?
Okay, you two. Well done, you successful podcasters.
Absolutely brilliant. Well done, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks everyone for listening. We hope there weren't too many recording quality issues.
And a huge thanks to Fiona and Alan for sharing their journeys so far. I think there's definitely quite a lot we can take away from what they've said, isn't there, Jan?
Indeed. I think some of the important points were that we often hear when we're working with our people that they don't often understand what's happened to them, and you know, they don't often see the difficulties they're having. Not only is the disability hidden from others, but it's often hidden from them as well.
Yep, absolutely. And it's that recurring theme of brain injury being a hidden disability, and just how important it is to be patient and to be gentle with people in their recovery.
Yeah, and then, you know, the role of rehab and helping people come to terms with what's happened to them and help them see the things that they need to work on or want to work on,
providing that support and that back?
Yeah, definitely. I've thought about this a lot recently. I've had quite a lot of the people I'm currently working with kind of raise this as something that's important to them, for everyone around them to acknowledge and to have that realisation, actually loss of kind of autonomy in their own lives and that sense of self is a really massive thing to for people to come to terms with. Let's face it, most of the people that you and I will be working with are oftentimes younger people who are still working, have families, are used to leading their own lives, and suddenly that autonomy has gone. And I thought it was interesting what was said around the benefits of getting positive feedback and the stock that people put in that from therapists. Again, I had someone recently saying that he was saying, you know, well, you're the one who's the expert in this condition, so for you to say I'm doing well, that really means a lot to me. And I think that kind of took me a wee bit by surprise when people said that, and Alan and Fiona kind of touched on that as well. And I think it's important for all of us to remember just how important the words that we say are to the patients that we're working with, not just in terms of what we ask them to do, but also how we give them feedback and give them positive feedback and constructive criticisms, or, you know, highlighting their strengths and their, you know, what they need to work on.
Yeah, and it sort of links a little bit with our family story that we did recently, Helen, with Anne. And, you know, I sort of think about, like you were talking about, that we have young people and not just young people, but people with all sorts of different family backgrounds, and that role that the person with the brain injury potentially may feel like they've lost, and the family might feel like they've lost. And it's about, you know, what our focus in rehab is, helping that person step back, step into that role again, you know, so looking for opportunities to be the father, the mother, the worker, the shopper, the, you know, the friend. And that's something that I think speech therapists are uniquely skilled to look at. The other thing that I found really encouraging, and you commented in the recording, Helen, was about Alan and Fiona's plans for the future.
Yeah, I think it's so important for people to have things that they look forward to, and to be thinking to maybe a few months down the line, a year, a couple of years. And I think it's maybe a mark of how far in their journeys, particularly, that they were able to kind of see what the future was going to hold. I think when maybe people are earlier on in their journeys, it's quite hard to look into the future, and it's all very much about the here and now, and the things that maybe are difficult. So to then get to a point where you think, okay, well, you know, maybe as Fiona was talking about our art, about meditation, about maybe sharing their stories with more people. I'm quite sure maybe it would have been hard for them to have had that conversation with us even just a few months ago, just because of the impact that this has had on their lives. And people need time to come to terms with that before they can then think, well, what does the future hold for me, and what do I want it to look like? But I think I say to people all the time, we have to have something to look forward to, don't we? Even if it's a tiny thing. So it can be a really small thing, like being able to wash your hair yourself, if that's been difficult for you, up to a big thing like returning to your previous job role, or, you know, what you're doing something that's much, much bigger. And it's just underlining the fact that everyone's got to undertake their own journey.
And I really liked that both Alan and Fiona were really committed to raising awareness for people who've had brain injuries. And I think that's part of our goal with this podcast, is raising awareness of, you know, people who've had brain injuries and the speech and language therapy role within that. So thanks everyone for listening. And yeah, for more information on how we work with people with brain injuries, listen in next time.
Cheerio for now.
Bye.